Hi, this is your host, Gareth Rice, and you're listening to Canadiana Suite on UMFM 101.5 radio station. This is a radio program primarily dedicated to highlighting the works of the many talented Canadian jazz artists on the scene today. What you just heard was the classic two-bass hit from 1958's Milestones, featuring none other than Philly Joe Jones on drums. We'll be joined by Fabio Rignelli, who teaches jazz drums here at the U of M. He graduated from Humber College in 2008 and has since become an in-demand sideman, performing and touring with a variety of artists such as the Alice and Al Quartet, Red Schwager, Will Bonis, and Alex Goodman. He's also quite the artist. We'll continue on with trumpeter slash pianist Brad Turner Cedar off his 2019 album Jump Up, then to Brazilian guitarist Guingas Katavenko e Girosol from 2015's Delirio Carioca. Thank you.
Do lado de fora do teu girassol, entre o estancário contido, eu te pedi sustenido e você riu bemol. Você só pensa no espaço, eu exigi duração. Eu sou um gato do subúrbio, você é litorânea. Quando eu respeito os sinais, vejo você de patins vindo na contramão. Mas quando ataco de macho, você se faz de capaz e não quer confusão. Nenhum dos dois se entrega, nós não ouvimos conselho. Eu sou você que se vai no sumidouro do espelho. Eu sou você que se vai no sumidouro do espelho. Eu sou do engenho de dentro e você vive no vento do arpoador. Eu tenho um jeito arredio e você é expansiva, o inseto e a flor. Torce pra me afarro, o outro é o de Allen. Quando assovio uma seresta, você dança vaiana. Eu vou de tênis e jeans, encontro você demais, escarpando soares. Quando o pau quebra na esquina, você ataca de fina e me ofende em inglês. É foco que eu bate bronha e ninguém mete o bedelho. Você sou eu que me vou no sumidouro do espelho. Você sou eu que me vou no sumidouro do espelho. A paz é feita no motel de uma lavada e passada, pra descobrir logo depois que não serviu pra nada. Nos dias de carnaval aumentam os desenganos. Você vai pra Paraty e eu pro cacique de Ramos. Cacique de Ramos. Meu catavento tem dentro o vento escancarado do arpoador. Teu girassol tem de fora o escondido do engenho de dentro da flor. Eu sinto muita saudade, você é contemporânea. Eu penso em tudo quanto faço, você é tão espontânea. Sei que um depende do outro só pra ser diferente, pra se completar. Sei que um se afasta do outro no sufoco somente pra se aproximar. Você tem um jeito verde de ser e eu sou meio vermelho. Mas os dois juntos se vão no sumidouro do espelho. Mas os dois juntos se vão no sumidouro do espelho.
Joining us is Fabio Regnelli, who teaches jazz drums here at U of M. He graduated from Humber College in 2008 and has since become an in-demand sideman, performing and touring with a variety of artists such as the Allison Al Quartet, Rick Schwager, Will Bonis, and Alex Goodman. How are you doing, Fabio?
Good, you?
Pretty decent.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I guess the first question is, what got you into jazz, by extension, music?
What got me into jazz is probably I'd been playing, kind of like self-taught and just kind of pushing myself, playing a lot of, you know, a lot of drummers start playing, you know, rock and stuff like that. So I was kind of playing with friends for a long time. And I, through playing with friends, I met one of my best friends, who's a guitarist. He's about 3 years older than me. And I noticed he was like this really, really great guitar player, and started playing with him more. And then he said, hey, you know, you should check this record out and check that record out. And it was kind of at the perfect timing, because I was kind of feeling like I needed to kind of push my ears and my playing. I was kind of getting a little, not bored is the wrong word, because I still love all that music and love listening to it and have huge respect for people that play it really well. But I was just kind of looking for something new. I was searching. So it kind of came at the right time. And so he gave me a couple records to check out, and kind of the rest is history.
The rest is history indeed. Yeah. Yeah, I guess going off of that, who would you say are your primary influences in terms of drums? Like, any particular albums that like influenced you or continue to influence you?
Yeah, I would say the first couple of jazz records that I had were, one of them was Heavy Weather, Weather Report record. Another one was ESP. I'm just trying to think like the first five, six records I had. Heavy Weather, ESP, so Tony Williams, you know. Then there was either Speak No Evil or Night Dreamer, one of those two. And Now He Sings, Now He Sobs. And there was, sorry, and then there was another Miles thing. There was a Miles, what's considered his third great quintet, like a very short-lived band. And that's from about 1969. And that's Jack DeJohnette replaces Tony Williams. Dave Holland replaces Ron Carter, and Chick replaces Herbie. And they played like still all around midnight and I Fall in Love Too Easily and all that stuff. But, you know, with Chick on Rhodes, Jack DeJohnette, and Dave Holland, it's just, and Wayne is still in the band. And so that's kind of where I thought jazz was like this incredibly, and I still think it is that, it's like incredibly interactive and creative and you know, really high level listening kind of type of music. So I would say, yeah, that's Jack DeJohnette, Tony Williams, Elvin Jones, Roy Haynes, and Alex Acuna. So not bad. You know, it took me a while to go to like kind of blue or that stuff. Not because I didn't like it. It just, that was the first jazz I heard. I didn't have anybody say, hey, you like jazz, go get kind of blue. So it took me a while to get to kind of blue, probably when I got into college, I would say.
Yeah, because I remember you were talking about how you were really into like Miles' second quintet and that kind of vibe.
Yeah, second and third quintet were like, I thought that's just what everyone thought jazz was or something, was like this really free and stretching and you know, highly interactive music. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's like all these phases too. It's pretty crazy, just when it, like all the minutia and everything.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Going off of that, like since you listed so many like drummers, I was wondering, like how do musicians become more aware of like invisible drumming, where they know the drumming is good, but like how to like really hone in on that, like both for their own like listening and just playing.
To know the drumming is good. Like how do other non-drummers, how do non-drummers identify a good drummer?
Yeah.
I think with the drums, with every instrument, it's really just how something makes you feel. You know what I mean? I know that sounds, there's an element of cheesiness there, but it really is that, like, what are you feeling? You know, so if I listen to, you know, Brian Blade play, I can't help but just be like, oh, You're feeling something, you know what I mean? Like he can really make that happen, you know, in any setting, musical setting. But it's the same thing listening to someone like Paul Motion or Kenny Clarke, you know. It's just, so I think drummers, like any really great drummer, is making you feel something. And you know, some people might say, oh, they make you want to dance. Sure, that's an element of it, you know, because that's just groove and feel. Really, that's all people are saying when they say, oh, the drums, you want to make the audience dance. All that means is good groove, good feel, good time, nice sound. So I think those really primal or intuitive instincts that just anybody has, musician, non-musician, when they hear music that makes them react, it's those things, but towards maybe the drums in particular. I don't know if that answers the question, but I think, like, if I'm, it's the same thing if I hear a piano player, you know, I'm not a piano player, but if I hear, you know, Herbie play something, or, you know, Rini Rosnes, or, you know, Chick Corea, you know, if I hear any of them say something right away, I'm, you know, or play something, you know, it makes me feel a certain way, even though I don't really know maybe technically what they're doing as a pianist, but I can tell that, you know, they're exuding some magic from the instrument.
So. Right. Yeah, I think what you're kind of getting at is like, there's like just elements that anyone can pick up, like rhythm or like just feel. It's like really intuitive thing. Like yeah. EDM, for example, like when you hear the beat drop, it's like, oh, it's going to be sick. Like you can't really, yeah.
That's the same thing with, you know, like with drumming. It's like, I think feel is the big one. Like where maybe other instruments can get away. I'm not saying get away, because that, you know, it's a little too broad, but where if the drummer's really technical, can really play a bunch of really technical stuff, but it just doesn't feel good at all, that's tough. Whereas the other way around works for drummers as well. If a drummer right. has really great feel and zero chops, they're great, they're working. But if they can play everything and they're super technical, but they have bad feel, odds are they're not maybe, you know, playing too much. I don't know. That's maybe a too bold a statement, but yeah, I think feel is the big thing with drums. So.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of like drums, like you studied with Kenny Washington, Rogério Baccato, and like Ashid Waits when you're in New York. So like, what specific techniques or methods did you learn from them when you were studying with them?
You know, I think each of them are really incredibly different. And studying for me, I just love a lot of music, and sometimes that's kind of can be a detriment to my progression sometimes, you know, but or development. But I always take like one-off lessons, or if a one-off goes really well, then I take a couple more from someone. And so with those musicians in particular, like Kenny Washington, you know, is undeniably just one of the most incredible, I hate to put him in a category, but like straight ahead drummers of all time. Like just to hear him play, it's just absolutely beautiful. Like his touch, his sound, it's awesome. So studying with him, taking some lessons with him, was really cool, because he just gives you some insight into how he thinks about playing the drums. And he's also a connection to this other world that doesn't exist. You know, we're talking about someone who's been playing the Vanguards, it seems like 17 or 18, you know, and touring with Betty Carter, playing with Johnny Griffin. Like it's a really cool thing to get to hang with him, because he's telling you of something that Philly Joe Jones told him, or something that Elvin Jones or Billy Higgins told him. So you're one degree of separation, you know, while you're hanging with the master, and you're one degree of separation from, you know, other masters. And so with him, it's really amazing. You're getting like a history lesson, a drum lesson, a lesson in discipline and how you got to really dedicate yourself. So it's like a life lesson. So he's just an amazing, amazing person, and hilarious in his own way. Like he definitely doesn't remember me. That guy's teaches a ton of people, right? Because he's a great teacher, so people want to go study with him. So the handful of lessons I had with him were made a huge impact. But for that thing, which I still, you know, dedicate time to, Rogerio is just an incredibly inventive, creative, amazing musician. And his main thing is, you know, percussion, drums, and but he writes really cool original music as well. And he's originally, you know, from Brazil. And so I love Brazilian music. So getting to play with Rogerio, getting to play with him in like band context, but then getting to study with him, getting to hear him. It's one, you know, back to the feel thing. Like you can't listen to Rogerio and not go like, oh my God, this feels incredible. This music feels unbelievable, right? And so he's just kind of been an amazing person, you know, and teacher and musician to be around. And he's really helped me out with a lot of stuff, you know, like he's really given me a lot of opportunities and put me in a lot of situations that I wouldn't have otherwise been in. And so I owe him a lot of, I just owe him a lot. He's really helped me out and we're still really good friends to this day. And he's amazing. And then someone like Nishit Waits is kind of like Kenny Washington in the sense that his dad, Freddie Waits, is this really legendary, you know, real legend. And so, you know, you take a lesson from Nishit and he's going to talk to you about like when he was a kid and Roy Haynes is hanging with his dad at his house. It's just a very cool thing. But he's this other guy who's just incredibly free. And he lets all of his musical influences come through his quote unquote jazz playing. Like if you've ever listened to Bandwagon, Jason Moran's group, or if you've ever listened to his drumming with this great, I want to say Iranian, I think he's, or maybe he's from Iraq, I'm not sure, Amir El-Safar, this great trumpet player, and hearing Nishit play in that context, Nishit has just the ability to like lift any band. Every time I've heard him, he just knows how to make the band sound better and push people into these kind of unknown boundaries, no matter what the song is. Like he's just incredibly inventive and musical and adventurous. And, you know, so for me, I get to hear someone like that and take a few, I only took two lessons with him, but both were really great and like just kind of stewed in my brain. And what was great about both of them was maybe not something in the moment that he said, but, you know, half a year later, a month later, whatever, now it's been years pre-pandemic, still resonate with me. I still think about them. So it's very cool. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just like the whole thing you're talking about with like artists, just like the whole degree of separation. It's kind of like the John effect where you talk with John and he has like so much knowledge.
It's the coolest thing ever, right? Like it's not quite getting it from the horse's mouth. I don't know if is that the saying, the horse's mouth?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty close, you know what I mean? Like definitely someone in the stable. So it's a cool thing to get to hang with these individuals, whoever they are, and get some insight into their creative process. And they're all vastly different, like Rogerio, Nishit, and Kenny Washington, like, you know, or Dan Weiss is someone that I took a lot of lessons with over the years. And at one point I was taking a bunch of lessons with him and Kenny Washington at the same time, and they're like musically maybe on opposite ends, but they were both at one point, the stuff they were talking about was like from the same book and the same recordings, and I was like, oh, this is very cool. So it was actually amazing experience. But yeah,
nice, everything is connected, the drum matrix.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the music, you know, the creative music, whatever, drum matrix, jazz matrix, whatever. You know,
yeah,
just music. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I guess to pivot to something you've talked about a lot, like an ensemble and like jazz ped, is like the term like Latin or Afro-Cuban in jazz. It never really gets utilized to its full extent. So like you get the whole like Girl from Ipanema thing where you play it over and over again, and it doesn't really resonate with the same effect. So how do you get away from that, like as like musician, and like really start diving into like the sense of like really diving into like Cuban music or like the really like rhythmic sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not like an authority figure on any genre, really, you know. But I think I would say that the big thing is listening and experiencing the music live. You know, like listening is pretty much the answer to everything, absolutely everything. Anytime you have a question about like a musical question, whatever it is, oh, how to feel or time or a groove or you know, whatever. It's the answer's on a record. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's even, I think that's something Clark Terry said. You know, like if you're ever looking for the answer to something, you know, just it's on a record somewhere. So, and it really is like, you know, growing up in Toronto, going to school in Toronto, it's a incredibly multicultural city, and so you're able to go here in a night, really great jazz. You know, and then go to another club and hear some salsa, like, and kind of high-end salsa, like really good bands. And then, you know, maybe the next night there's a really great Brazilian group playing. And so, as a drummer, I just think it's hard to like ignore that, like, especially if you're thinking of the roots of music. You know, when we talk about jazz, we talk about the roots, you know. We talk about Black American roots, especially in, you know, starting in New Orleans and everything. And I think as any musician, but especially as a drummer, you're like, well, what if I go further back? What's happening pre New Orleans, you know? And now all of a sudden you're in West Africa, right? And you're checking out what's happening there rhythmically. And then that spreads to Brazil in about the 1500s, the northeastern part of Brazil. So now you're getting this some insight into what that is, and then in the 1700s to Cuba, you know, with the slave trades, you know. And so once you start learning about that stuff, it's kind of like, well, I want to play jazz and I'm a drummer, and what are the roots of rhythm, you know, like where, like how come when I listen to three percussionists, you know, from Cuba, like if I listen to one of these incredible groups like Los Muniquitos de Matanzas, like it's just drums and voice, and you can, and they have like, you know, whatever, 7,000 albums, and every single one of them is great, and every time it's a new tune, the groove, something feels different, even though you might say, oh, it's kind of the same, it's got the same feel, but you know, the improvising, the energy is incredible. So for me, I just think it's listening. Like when I started playing some more Brazilian music, I just didn't want to sound, I'm not saying I want to sound like a legit Brazilian musician, but I definitely didn't just want to sound like a, you know, like what we're talking about is a jazz person who doesn't check out any Brazilian music and is now playing a bossa nova. And it's kind of like, you know, that's not really what I was going for. I was like, oh, I want to just kind of capture that spirit. What makes it so beautiful when this person plays it? And how come it doesn't sound like that when I play it, you know? So it's about that desire to try to just kind of capture a moment, I guess, when you're playing different things. And, you know, with for me as a once again as a drummer or as, you know, rhythm section player, you know, we've talked about this, like Afro-Cuban music is just incredibly rich music, culturally creative, like it's just unbelievable music. So I just choose not to ignore that it's there. You know, and it applies to everything, you know, like it's something, you know, if you listen to Elvin Jones and you hear, you know, how he uses the middle triplet, you know, and that's his thing, right? And then you go back a little further and listen to like some Afro-Cuban music. That's middle triplet is like a huge thing in that genre of music. And there's like stories of like Max Roach in the 60s, like going to Cuba and just driving around trying to find these masters. And you know, he's like, I'm Max Roach. And they're just like, who? You know what I mean? And like, it's just really funny to think that Max Roach was just trying to find these. Once again, it's that search, especially someone like Max Roach. He's constantly searching for new sounds, new ideas, creative, always evolving. Any story I've ever heard about Max Roach, it's about him being one of the most intelligent people ever, just always reading about different cultures, different music, checking out everything. And so it's always been part of the jazz tradition, let's say, to to think like that, you know what I mean? To really kind of push yourself to learn more. Once again, I think it's really listening, you know, really just putting on those records and checking them out. So
yeah, definitely.
A little long-winded, sorry about that, but yeah.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's like, I guess it's like if you bake an apple pie, if you get it from the store and it's like, you get a processed one and it's like, okay, I can cook this and it tastes kind of weird. It tastes all right, but if you like go and like you cook it and you figure out like a recipe, then it's going to taste a lot better and you can like mix it. So
yeah, and even if it's not like, even if the shape's a little off, you're a little closer, you know what I mean? Like it means more. That right. that awkward shaped apple pie, you know, with the like pretty bitter aftertaste is yours, and it's far more unique, you know. So
yeah definitely. Yeah, I guess for a esoteric pivot, what inspired your art career? Because I was talking with your bandmate Allison Au, and she mentioned that you drew the logo for Wonder Wander.
I did. Yeah. Oh, that's really funny. Inspired? I don't think art career. That's very kind of you. Some would call it doodling. I don't know. As a kid, I used to just sketch a lot, draw a lot, especially in class. Bit of a daydreamer, like not super focused, always kind of sketching something in the corner of a page. I still do it to this day quite a bit. And that thing was just in one of my little notebooks that, like, you know, you write down musical ideas, drum ideas, you know, or you go see a show and they played something, you just kind of keep a note of what it was or something. And I remember that was just a result of, like, I think that night in particular, my phone had died. I hadn't anything to listen to. And I had my cymbal bag as opposed to my backpack. And I had a long subway ride home from where I was. And I remember phone died, so I can't listen to any music. Took my cymbal bag, so I don't have a book in there. But I just got my, you know, I've just got my my notebook or whatever. And I was just like, oh, whatever, kill some time. I'll just kind of sketch. And I really liked it. And I remember when Allison was talking about some ideas, she's like, oh, I don't know, something like vivid, like bold colors or something. And I was just kind of like, oh, well, if we add some color to this thing, I think this could be kind of a cool little abstract idea. And the thing about Allison, you know, well, one of the many incredible things about Allison is she's just super open-minded and she's honest. So it's not like if she didn't like it, she would have just said, oh, sure, let's use it. You know, like she would, it's not like if she felt bad for me, she would have used it anyways, you know, but she liked it. And it's really cool. Cause once again, with Allison, she includes the band in certain things. So she sent around a couple of options and the band's like, I don't know. I still kind of like the one Fab drew. So I kind of got lucky there, but I would say that's the full extent of my, there won't be any gallery openings anytime soon. So, but I still just draw whatever, you know.
Cool. Yeah, maybe there'll be a sequel, a moment in time for your artistic talents to truly shine.
Yes, that would be great. I have something here actually that I drew for a recital I had a couple of years ago. And so I figured, why not make a poster for it? And so, and this was in the same couple of years as Allison's thing. So there's similar themes, you know, pretty like jagged, you know, the triangle thing going on here. But I got a little, this was for a recital I did a couple of years ago. So that's the original poster for my recital there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that's it, you know.
Eternal triangle.
Eternal triangles. Yeah, I guess yeah. I'm just I haven't gone beyond triangles, so we'll see.
Yeah. Also, I guess it's kind of another pivot again, but like you've also talked about like teaching a lot, like in your jazz pet class and like all the things that come with it. So I was wondering, like, what personally do you get out of teaching? Like, what drives you to like teach and just?
Oh, that's easy. Well, what do I get out of it is, you know, I know it's the cliche thing to say, but really, like, teachers are learning as much as the students. You know what I mean? You're learning, you have to constantly reevaluate what's important when you're teaching students. And I think that's a really great thing just for musicians to do in general. So if I'm talking to a student and they need to work on something specific, rather than, you know, maybe recommend this and this and this, I gotta, you know, you gotta really sit there and go through your own experiences, your own development, your own ideas, and your own whatever, and really just think of, what can I suggest that'll get this student to where they need to go and is like the clearest path? And so it's this thing of clarity in your ideas, which sometimes, you know, depending on, if I got too many, like, I can ramble on constantly, in case you ever notice, but so I'm not necessarily one for clarity of ideas, but it's something to aspire to. So I'm working on that. And I think teaching really forces you to be clear in your explanations and what information is that you think is really valuable. So as a teacher, that's what I learn. I learn, like, you know, what really matters in music, what matters to me in music, and how can I help someone? And that's in addition to, like, a student bringing in music that I've never heard, or playing something that I didn't expect, or, you know, just hanging around with students, you're just constantly kind of learning. Like, the reality is, it's just, you know, the way it works out in life, but teachers are often older than students, and students offer a maybe current perspective into what's happening. So I think it's a really cool thing. And then what drives me is, talking about music, there's something that, if someone's just interested in music, you know, I'm not thinking of them as a student anymore. You know, we're just musicians at that point. And I love hanging with musicians and talking about music. So it's easy. You know, that makes teaching really easy. If someone cares about music and wants to improve, and because that's what I, you know, that's what I am. I'm someone who cares about music and wants to improve. So now you meet someone else in this, you know, small weird club, you know, and it's just kind of like, hey, you're part of the club. Great. All right, let's talk music. And you know, oh, do you hear this? Do you hear that? So that's just something that makes teaching, like, the line of teaching is then almost blurred, because you're just sharing ideas with someone about this common interest, you know. So
yeah, definitely. And it's like what you said before, like, with, like, if you're a teacher, if you're a student, like, with music, you're always learning. So there's always, like, a new opportunity for
always,
like, growth and inspiration.
Always. There's, like, even if you see a show you don't like, or there's a master class, or you take a lesson with someone and it wasn't really what you expected, there's one thing they said. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Even if you have the worst lesson ever with someone, there'll be one thing in that time that you could get out of it, or reflect on, or, you know, something that'll make you think. That's all. It's just going to be something that makes you think.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess going off that, would you say, like, what would you say is, like, your drum philosophy? Like, if you had to narrow it down, like, what is Fabio Ragnelli's guide to, unclassified guide to drums, ooh, drum philosophy?
Oh. Drums, I would say drums, I just love playing the drums, just a disclaimer. Like, I just love sitting behind the drums, creating on the drums. To say practice is, I love practicing. I don't know if, you know, I just love playing the drums, and it just so turns out that playing the drums by yourself and practicing are the same thing. So it kind of works out, but I don't know. I like learning. I think just being open-minded is really important when you're playing the drums or music in general. This goes to my next point, which is, like, is it musical? You know, so I think if I think of playing the drums as just playing music, the answer is always, like, I want to learn more. I want to check out stuff. And I want to check stuff out. And if I can benefit from it and it makes me a better musician, you know, or a more creative, intuitive, better listener when I'm playing with people, then I'll take it, you know. But in terms of the drums, for me, because it's not like very natural for me talent wise, like I ran out of talent, natural talent, about a week into playing the drums, you know. So for me, it's definitely always just been hard work. Like I've seen the results that practicing, like what practicing can do. But I have friends that are like just actually just naturally incredible that don't practice. They're just not, like, they just got it, you know, and that's amazing. That's definitely not me. So for me, I do need to do like the maintenance of some like technique stuff. And by technique, I don't even necessarily mean focusing on specific things, more like playing on a practice pad. Like I got to warm up, you know, I got to make sure like everything's kind of comfortable. I got to kind of get in the mindset before I play or something, especially in a performance situation. Like I do got to be in that right mindset. So it takes me a little, so I need to do all those things just to maintain whatever level I'm at. So for me, my drum philosophy is to just kind of always be working at it, always try to play as much as you can. And if you're not playing, like I'm thinking about it constantly. So even if I'm not playing, I'm listening and I'm thinking what I can change, you know, or what I'd like to change in my playing. I usually typically write like a little list every once in a while, maybe once, twice a year, of things I'd like to do on the drums and things I'd like to change on the drums, what I don't like about my playing. And not in this like self-deprecating way, but more of like a honest criticism of what I don't like in my playing and try to follow my ears and the things that I do want to achieve. So I think just being honest with yourself is really important. Maybe that's part of my drum philosophy. I don't know. I haven't thought about my drum philosophy, but it does come back to like good time, you know, good time, good feel, and just play, just try to play, be in the zone. I think like really be in the moment, which is really hard. I know everyone says it, but it's tough to just play in the moment, not think about what's coming up in the tune or what just passed, but really like every beat and really listening. And all the musicians I love, I think that's what it sounds like they're doing. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Do you have any future gigs or any future projects coming up? Any future drum notation books?
Yeah, drum notation books, probably not. I wouldn't want to add so much. It's a pretty saturated market, and everyone has said something incredibly valuable. So I would be just piggybacking on some already pretty great resources, or adding to the not so great resources. But gigs coming up. Let me think what's happening. Oh, I'm playing with Will at the end of the month. With Will Bonas, we're playing his CD release show, and he's got a lot of new music as well. So that's exciting. I love playing Will's music; it's really great. And then a couple of gigs in later in the summer. I'm kind of taking off like this for a chunk of the summer, and I'm just going to be kind of just hanging and visiting friends and stuff. And so there's always going to be jam sessions, but this is the first summer in a long time where I've consciously chosen to kind of not be around for any jazz festivals anywhere. Not to say that I would be busy working and everything, but I'm just kind of like, I always think, oh, I got to be around for festival time and gigs and everything. And I never get to like maybe do something at that time of year, but we're going to visit my in-laws, and I'm going to a buddy's wedding anniversary. And in both places, there's going to be a ton of musicians. Like the wedding anniversary is for a great drummer and cymbal maker, Jesse Simpson. And it's going to be only musicians there. So we'll be jamming there. When I go visit my in-laws, there's a bunch of friends that I have there. So I'll be jamming there. But in terms of performances, until like other than just some gigs here and there, I'm really looking forward to Will's gig, and I'm looking forward to some stuff later in the fall, late summer and in the fall. Yeah, so.
Nice.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Garrett. Yeah, it was awesome.
Do you have any cool drum albums that you'd like to play out with?
That I'd like to play out with? Like you're going to put something on?
Yeah, any cool recommendations?
Oh, man. Well, if you can find it, only because I recommended it just yesterday to a student, is this Jerry Hemingway album. Jerry with a G, like G-E-R-R-Y. Hemingway, yeah. Like Ernest Hemingway. It's a solo drum record called Kernlings, K-E-R-N-I-L-I-N-G-S, Kernlings. And I just recommended that to a student yesterday or the day before, just talking about solo drum pieces. And now you ask for a cool thing, and that's a very cool thing. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Awesome.
Thanks to Fabio Regnelli for being here on the show. What you heard before the interview was Two Bass Hit from Milestones, Brad Turner's Cedar from Jump Up, and Gwinga's Katavenko y Girasol from Delirio Carioca. We'll finish off with drummer Jerry Hemingway's solo drum piece Be Slow from 2014's Kernelings and the underrated Lau Mays composition Choring Ho, performed by Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes from their 2010 dual album Double Portrait. This is Canadiana Suite, signing off.